Now we're joined in studio by seven-time All-Ireland winner and social activist, Philly McMahon. How are you doing, Philly?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
No problem.
So where do we start? 33 a few weeks ago?
Yeah, getting old. Getting old.
Are you very conscious of your age?
No.
No?
No.
No, but being a sort of an
only a number for me.
An elite sportsman.
Oh, well, I mean, when it comes to sport, when you're walking into the change room, you probably notice it a little bit all right. But, no, like, I mean, you try not to think of it, but it's definitely there. Like,
because you're an elder lemon now.
And I am, unfortunately, yeah. Yeah, we were doing, like, the young lads versus the old lads in training last night with Ballymun Kickhams, and I tried to sneak into the younger group. Didn't happen, though.
McMahon over here.
Yeah, straight over away. Here. Get over to the old lads.
So you're in the final, the county final, is it?
Yeah, we've Ballyboden, who won it last year, who are really strong. So it's going to be a big challenge, but it's nice to be back there with the group of lads we've had, especially with the six Dublin lads being away for so long every year that we can actually play a little bit.
Yeah, because this year clubs are getting the benefit of their county players a lot more.
Exactly, yeah. We would have been... generally it would have been a longer season for us if we get to an All-Ireland final with Dublin, but having to, you know, having that bit of time together to blend and to have the band and the crack, it's been great.
Yeah. And do you think the GAA might re-look at, because the people have been asking for changes for the last few years, saying that there was too much pressure on people like yourself and that the clubs were losing out. Do you think because of COVID they might look at things differently in the future?
I'm not sure. It You'd like to think that there will be learnings from what's at the happening from a GAA perspective. But ultimately, you're always going to have issues, you know, regardless if you go too much towards the club, you're going to have issues in the county. So I wouldn't like to be that person making those decisions.
Right. So there was a bit of a dust up, Shemozzle, Malie in the semi-final. What day was it, on Sunday or Saturday?
Sunday, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Was it serious?
Not really, no. Two lads were going at it and then a few lads ran in to pull each other out. And look, this is the way, when you're in a semi-final and you're, you know, in a heated battle, this just happens, you know.
Yeah. And how would you describe it in Ballymun Kickers? How would you describe that, what happened? A schmozzle or what? Or
a little Millie.
Now, people will know that you're an activist for mental health and other things, and that's part of the reason you're here, because you're involved in an initiative with the Irish Youth Foundation and VHI.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I have a charity called Halftime Talk, and it's to help at-risk youth. And when I was asked to get involved as an ambassador for this campaign, it was a no-brainer for me, because I think this cohort of people in society now are very vulnerable. I think they have been for years. And then add in the added pressure of social media and technology, add in then the pandemic that we're in, we are going to have serious issues at the other end of this pandemic. So there's loads of brilliant community organisations doing great work to keep young people, you know, on the straight and narrow and keep them in a good pathway in life. But then there's, for every one good thing, there's three or four options to go the other way. So the opportunities are unfortunately there to go down a negative pathway rather than a good pathway. So, and that on top of that, when you think about it, you've got all these issues in society. You've got trauma, childhood trauma. You've got drug addiction. You've got mental health, and you've got technology and all these addictions and all these issues. And then you've got something that can combat that in youth clubs and community groups. But as a country, we actually punish those by funding them poorly, which doesn't make any sense.
No. Yeah. So this is a grant system between 5 and 10 thousand euro available to charity, non-profit organisations around the country who are helping young people in the area of mental health and well-being. And you can go to IYF, that's the Irish Youth Foundation, /grants, and you'll get details of it.
Exactly.
And it's, so that's a lot
it's
of money.
Simple as that.
That can make a huge difference.
Yeah, definitely will. Yeah,
10,000. Yeah, we've spoken before about you're the type of person who knows how lucky you are.
Mm.
You know, you've said that to me before, that you mentioned it already there. You could have gone down a different path. Was enough for sport.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, sport, I would say, is in many ways was my saviour in terms of my life, because I suppose I had a lot of trauma from seeing things happening in my area, or from, let's say, from the family home in terms of my brother John's addiction. So with that trauma, how do I vent that? What would I have ended up doing? And if I didn't have sport, where could I have vented that? Like, you know, and that's what I always think about. Like, that's how easy I could have turned into criminality because of that negative energy I had. So I was able to vent that playing sport and have mentors see that and funnel it in the right direction.
Yeah, and you were lucky you were very good at it.
Well, I wasn't very good at the beginning, but I definitely had a lot of energy that could be moulded into being a
good,
footballer,
yes,
you know.
That's
why I'm the type of player I am.
And, you know, I've probably said this to you before, but whenever we, like, we've interviewed a number of heroin addicts on the programme over the years, and there's a group of people who text in, you know, and whereas they'd, you know, I'd be talking to them about, you know, been victims nearly, you know, been... You know, they were brought up in a certain area and they saw that the only way they could go was to take drugs. And then you get the people who say, well, I know somebody who was brought up in the same area and they didn't take drugs. Like, it's about choices and some people make the wrong choices. And do you think that about you and John? Because, you know, you went one way and he went the other way and he's not with us anymore.
I agree with that. Yeah, that's why the book I wrote was called The Choice.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
But it's not as easy as that. It's a very complex issue. There's a thing called ACEs, which is Adult Childhood Experiences, and you basically get measured on your trauma, and that can, you know, lead to you becoming somebody that struggles with mental health, or, you know, goes into the world of addiction or criminality, or maybe has a child at a very young age. But when you're born, if you were to go into Mountjoy now, you'd see all of those prisoners would have ACEs.
Right.
There is outliers. There definitely is. And them outliers...
People who buck the trend.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, it's people that that essentially have learned from somebody. That's what happened to me. I seen my brother John's pain and suffering and I went the opposite direction.
Uh-huh.
Not everybody has that opportunity.
Yeah.
So it's very important for people to understand that the addicts we see mostly on the streets... are the ones that are definitely ones that are struggling with their psychological pain and using drugs to overcome it.
Yes.
So it is a mental health issue. We have a huge amount of people taking cocaine in this country, a huge amount of people taking smoking hash and smoking weed. Why are they not all addicts? Now, some of them don't know they're addicts or don't want to believe they're addicts, but there's a huge amount of them that take drugs, but they're not addicts. And what it stems down to is that they mightn't have that psychological trauma.
Right.
That overshadows the pain that they have psychologically.
So, John and people like that who have addictions, that they're trying to blot out the pain.
Exactly. Yeah.
The mental pain from something that happened, or yeah.
Yeah, John would have struggled. We found out a bit later in his life, John would have struggled with his mental health. He would have been schizophrenic. He would have had issues there, and definitely. He would have had friends that started drugs with him but didn't stay on drugs as long as him.
Yeah.
And he always struggled to come off heroin and methadone, you know, so...
Because the reality of his schizophrenia was worse than...
Well, we look at people based off the drug they take and not the issue they have.
Yes.
I think that's very important that we need to change that.
How do you change it?
Well, there's a couple of different things. We need to spend money rightly in terms of changing cultural cycles, changing generational cycles. If you're born in a working class community, you are essentially starting off on an unlevel playing field because you've got all these issues passed down to you. Also, then you don't have the resources or the financial resources to actually go into maybe recovery as someone that would have from a middle class to upper class. Mm. So you're starting off on an unlevel playing field. So we need to bridge the social inequality gap. And how we do that is we give you know, young people in working class communities better opportunities. So if there's a choice for them to go and walk across the road and make €500 carrying a bag of drugs compared to walking to school or walking to work and going through that barrier of adversity or resilience, you know, to stay in the straight and the narrow, that's what we need to do. And on the other end is we need to decriminalise drugs.
Mm.
We need to stop treating these people as criminals and treat them as people that are struggling with mental health.
Do you think when people hear that decriminalise drugs, they go, oh no, you can't do that, you can't do that. And there is a difference between decriminalising and making them legal, isn't there?
Yes, I think that's what people mix up the most when it comes to that. And even experts, there was a tweet there by an expert, so-called expert in the area.
You don't have to name him.
I won't name him. and he's mixed up legalisation and decriminalisation a lot. Yeah. But decriminalisation means if you see someone with personal use of drugs on the streets, the Garda pulls them over and says, if you've got a problematic issue, drug, do you want to go in and get help? And maybe they'll sit in front of, in Portugal, they'll sit in front of a dissuasion committee, which is just a normal building.
So a dissuasion committee. So they it's exactly what it says on the tin. You sit in front of three people and maybe a psychologist and a medical doctor, and they try and dissuade you from taking drugs.
Exactly. Because ultimately that's...
It sounds quaint in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, like if you look at the recent policy we've put in place, which is just, it's crazy to think, you've got a three-strike policy now. So if you're caught with drugs, you get a slap on the wrist, second time slap on the wrist, third time you're going to be... you're going to be incriminated, you're going to get a charge. When has ever a drug addict stopped taking drugs, first of all from a guard stopping them, and second of all after three attempts? It doesn't work, like, it's never worked. So we have had policy after policy.
You see, it's important, and this is because there are subtleties in this and it's very complex, and you know that. Like in Portugal, which is cited all the time as a model that has worked, so they've decriminalised it, but it's still illegal. Drugs are still illegal.
Yes.
Yeah, which is an odd thing, but it, it seems to work for them, because
it's just,
if you look at the,
different.
If you look at the rate of deaths from drugs, it's less than 4 per 100,000 in Portugal, and we're over 40 or something. Like, we're 10 times worse off.
We've over one person dying a day. Now compare that to what we have in terms of the COVID issue. We've unfortunately lost a lot of people to that. But when you look at it, we have over a million people brilliantly and rightly so marching in Phoenix Park for Darkness and Delight every year. Obviously not this year because the circumstances are in. We have one person dying a day from an overdose, and yet nobody's marching, nobody's talking. You have every Christmas campaigns around car accidents. You've got campaigns about influenza prior to the COVID situation we're in. Nobody talks about it. Why? Because it's a dirty criminal issue and we need to change that. There's people committing suicide because they feel they're letting their family members down because they're a drug addict. That shouldn't be the issue. That shouldn't be happening.
Of course, there are no votes in it.
Exactly. And people, you know, on the streets that are addicts, they don't vote, like, so the political world won't give, you know, don't care about it.
Well, you keep, you know, you have to keep saying, because you have a platform, you know, and you have to talk to politicians and make them change their minds. And this thing that you're involved in, which is a good thing, the Irish Youth Foundation and VHI, they anecdotally, everyone's saying that there's going to be a spike in mental health issues right across the board, including young people, because of COVID. And I was wondering, because I was watching John Horan on the news last night, and the championship is going ahead, which is great news.
Yeah, it's great news.
There'll be nobody at it, but it'll be on the telly. But this is the thing, and I'm working it through. You might help me work it through in my head. So the government, they're saying, it hasn't been finalised, but they're saying 19 and a half million, 20 million, they're going to give to the GAA to run the championship. And then CAMHS are, you know, stretched. They, you know, they can't afford to treat young people who are, have mental health issues. Like, if you were in charge and you had that 20 million, would you spend it on the championship or would you spend it on youth mental health?
It's a hard question. It's a really good question as well, I think. If you had the evidence that it would, I'd say definitely give it to people with mental health. But we don't have that. And the facts are that we do know that sport helps people with mental health.
But the championship is only going to be elite county players.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But it's even a distraction for people. Let's say, for example, there's a lot of young people that now are being more exposed to domestic violence and domestic abuse because they're in the home a lot more, okay? Especially during the lockdown. So yes, they will then have trauma and they will have mental health issues. If they have an opportunity to watch football at the elite level, that can be a distraction for them. Yeah. You know, something to look, something
forward
that was a norm.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I think you talk to any fan in the country, they want sport back. They need sport back.
You know? And that's the important word there, the norm and normal. And it's nearly like a two fingers to COVID. Like, we're getting on with things despite you.
Yeah, I think technology is going to be a bigger issue rather than saying, can we put, you know, 20 million into mental health, which I'd love because that's, you know, I'm an activist in that area. Yes. But I think we need to look at technology. You know, we need to start as a country being pioneers in our approach around social media platforms. We need to need to step up as a country. We need to have our leaders, political leaders, saying we need better regulations.
It's not going to happen.
No, unfortunately.
Because just go down the road there and you'll see the headquarters, the European headquarters of Google, LinkedIn, Facebook.
Too much money involved.
Too much money involved.
I'd love to take 20 million off those.
Yes.
And put into mental health.
Yeah.
Rather than sport.
So what's your understanding? How is it going to work then? So the All-Ireland final, and if Dublin are going for six in a row, they will be there, is scheduled for what date?
Well, so the All-Ireland final is 5 days before Christmas,
right?
You know, so that's amazing in itself. You know, to say you played football that year where it was a championship in the winter is going to be something special. You can tell your kids in years to come. It's an extra special championship because it's knockout as well. You know, so it's for anybody.
Is it?
Yeah. So we'll go
so
back.
There's no back door. No.
As far as I know, it's knockout straight away. So it's it has an interesting aspect to it straight away, you know.
Right. So six in a row, is that? You know,
the big one was everybody spoke about five in a row. And for me, once you've done that, then it doesn't really matter. Like in terms of, I wouldn't be going around saying in the change room, let's get six. You know, we have a new management team. A lot of new players have come in this year as well. So it's kind of a new start, you know. So we're going for one in a row if we can. But like, I mean, it's going to be so strange because we haven't played together in so long in the last couple of months where we would have this time of the year. So it's going to be nice to get back with the lads and you know, get back training.
So you've been in more than seven All-Ireland finals, have you?
Seven.
Seven. Oh, you won all. You've never lost an All-Ireland final?
No. Fortunate enough.
So yeah. 80,000 people in Croke Park and you're greeted with this din. This, like, you can't hear yourself think.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're in that final now, you're going to be walking out, there's going to be tumbleweed.
Well, I think from what I read in the roadmap, if things go to plan and the restrictions are dropped a little bit as time goes on towards the end of the year, that there will be fans at the games.
Like what, 5,000 or something?
They said 5,000 in Croke Park, you know. And 5,000 is a lot because if you watched Ballymun Kickham's play on TG Carter last week, you'd have about 10 or 11 people in the stands that are subs and management.
Yeah.
And you can hear the noise of them.
Okay.
So 5,000... We'll make a bit of noise and a bit of atmosphere. Yeah. Look, there's other sports. You look at soccer, you see there's nobody in the stands.
No.
So
what about, because I've been watching them and it's very odd the way they're playing in the soundtrack of crowds.
Yeah, it is a bit weird. Like, and it doesn't feel real. It doesn't match. It. So I don't think the GAA should go that route if the games had to be behind closed doors, you know.
I wonder would it work if they were actually putting it through the PA system? Like if you had a guy there.
I wonder if that's... I'm not sure if they do that, but yeah, it'd be interesting.
So you look fit. So you've been obviously doing your own thing. And that's what people have been doing.
I'm very lucky that the career I'm in is it's the fitness world. It's I have a gym, BD7 in Finglas there. So it's been tough for us, you know, because when we went into lockdown... not all of our members were kind of into the online stuff and we dropped a huge amount of revenue from that. And then also we had an 8,000 square foot unit. So when we asked the landlord for support, unfortunately they couldn't give it to us. So we had 3 months, you know, where we had to pay rent and we hadn't got it. Chasing our tail a little bit now. And we're just trying to adapt when we hear all the different restrictions change and it's being tough, but we're in a good place.
They're changing by the day, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah.
How is married life treating you?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And I suppose the other opportunity of the whole thing is to spend a bit of time with your loved ones.
Sarah, it's been great with
Sarah, and my two dogs. So.
Right. What are the dogs called?
Hugo and Mello. Two chow-chows we have. Big bears there.
Right, so IYF, Irish Youth Foundation, /grants, and they're looking for... non-profit organisations, charity organisations around the country who are helping young people with their mental health and well-being.
Yes.
And they have grants from 5,000 to 10,000. Yeah. And I think they have 85,000 to give away.
Exactly,
That's good to see you, Philly. Mind
Thanks
yourself.
For having me.
Good luck in the championship.
Thank you.
Quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.